Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror. My name's Sarah Morgan.
Hello.
How are you? How's your week been? I am very happy because I've got to see Haunted Gingerbread Showdown. Regular listeners will know that I was trying to track down this show that might have been quite important to my own personal self-care journey. I found it. I got Julian Assange to tape it for me off the telly. I hacked the mainframe, Weird Science style, and yeah, it was everything I needed it to be. Just really nice, competitive people being slightly obsessed by gingerbread. Elvira was a guest judge. She looked spectacular. She looked spooktacular. Hello. And someone made chocolate cockroaches that had white chocolate truffle filling and a kind of passion fruit glaze, so they crunched when you bit them, and honestly that person is like my new god. And also they kept talking about spice profiles, their gingerbread spice profile, so you know, I'm starting to feel alive again. I feel like I'm gonna fight a new day. So I hope you're all practicing self-care. I hope you're all realizing that fear is a superpower, to quote Doctor Who from the Riley Silverman episode. Fear is a superpower, please be using it. My guest this episode is Matt Kirshen. Matt Kirshen is a British comedian based in LA, Los Angeles. He is an old friend of mine. We've written on lots of things together. We wrote a show called Bigopedia with Nick Doody and Kerry Marks for Radio 4 a long time ago. And right now Matt is slumming it in LA. He's a writer on the Jim Jefferies programme for Comedy Central. He's also got his own podcast, Probably Science, which is very good. We recorded this conversation a while ago. Its themes are pretty timeless. Actually, funnily enough, we talk a lot about Halloween, which is now just around the corner again. Holidays are coming, holidays are coming. Goth Christmas. I am very excited about Goth Christmas. We talk a lot about clowns, weirdly, because we talk about Stephen King's It, about halfway through the good Stephen King's It, obviously not the new one. I haven't seen it. Maybe it's great. I don't care. It's not Tim Curry. Holly Gabrielson, who is Matt's girlfriend, also a human woman in her own right, she joins us about halfway through the conversation to talk a bit about the clown attacks that were going on in LA at the time of recording. And by clown attacks, I mean humans dressed as clowns attacking people, not people attacking clowns, which would just be vicious. We also talk about Matt's fear of heights, a terrible thing that happened to him at a fun fair as a child, immersive horror experiences, all those kind of things. And we start the conversation by talking about how scary it is when you try and approach someone who you artistically admire. So I hope you enjoy the chat. I think it's a really lovely episode. I love hearing from you. Last week's episode with Carrie Quinlan, I got lots of really nice messages about, I think it was quite a sort of raw episode. I felt a bit like I was being a bit overshary, a bit of an open wound, but actually people said nice things, so that's great. And you know, it's brilliant to hear from you. So at The Fear Podcast, I hope you like the music. It is by my husband Tim Bazell. Rate and review the show on iTunes if you like. It's up to you. Live your best life, babes. And for now, enjoy this chat with my good friend, the lovely Matt Kirshen. Cheers. Yeah, so we've just been, and this does tie into the theme of the show, because we have just been, I'm in Los Angeles. Hello. Smell me. And we just went for brunch at a pop-up restaurant run by Khalees, who is a musician who I love, and I love her so much. Yeah. Like, and she's also a Cordon Bleu trained chef, so she did like this pop-up brunch thing.
It was really good.
It was really good, right?
it was actually good, not just like pop star made it good.
No, yeah, it wasn't like, well done, you tried really hard, like when a pop star does acting or something. It was like, no, it was like fucking amazing, like the bacon, oh my god. And yeah, and weirdly I just wanted her to spit in my food. Could you send this back? Could the chef?
Or mouth, just spit in my mouth.
Just like a bird. Could she feed me like a bird? Could at least feed me like a bird. But yeah.
That's going to drop you, it's just going to drop you at least one star on Yelp if you don't spit this food into my mouth.
Yeah, I demand this of you. But yeah, I might.
I am the customer, and the customer is always right. And as such, I have the right to have you spit in me.
Yeah. I did a thing that, to me, felt like one of the scariest things in the entire world, and which was ask Matt's gorgeous and wonderful girlfriend Holly to take a picture of me with Khalees, as if Khalees would just like punch me in the face. Well, I'd be fine with that. Yeah. As if Khalees would just go, no, I will not.
How? I opened this place expecting that no one would ask me around.
Yeah, I didn't think my name would have any cachet at all. I just want to cook bacon and delicious funnel cakes.
Bernard, close this restaurant.
Burn Hollywood to the ground. I like that. I love there are some things I'm so not frightened of. And then there are, like, just something like that just makes me want to, like, I can feel my gizzards turning to ice.
Yeah,
like, I'm
awful.
Doing this terrifying thing, like I'm going to space or something. But, like, I want a picture with a musician who I love sincerely, genuinely, not just a, oh, look, a famous, like, but I still was like, oh, God, what if she hates me?
Yeah, and it is also, there's a sort of the status thing of, like, I am now acknowledging that you're a famous and
yeah.
I, a humble normal.
Yeah.
Wished.
Have you ever met or approached someone who you were terrified to approach? Like a celebrity, not just like a woman in an alley. So. Yeah, because I bet she was right too, so.
I can think of a few.
Mm. Do all of them right now.
All of them right now. Because, like, generally, I'm pretty good now at not being starstruck.
Yeah. Because you live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, just like, there's a certain amount of, like,
showbiz twat. So. Sorry, back to the formality.
Completely.
Yeah, so.
There's a certain amount. There's a few that, I met Buzz Aldrin, and I was legitimately starstruck on that one.
Well, no pun intended. Yeah, he's touched.
He's actually touched the moon.
Yeah.
Through gloves, but it counts.
And punched a man for not believing he touched the moon, which is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, he'll punch anyone, really.
Oh, really?
No.
I should ask him.
He probably would. Like,
I should ask him for a picture and see if he'll punch. With his big gloves.
Big moon gloves. Put your moon gloves on and punch me.
Oh, it's a thing. I didn't know I had one. No.
Yeah.
Turns out that's my thing. That's really, imagine if that was your thing.
The only way I can enjoy my life is if I'm punched by an astronaut.
But one of the good ones.
One
like
of
not
ones.
Not like one of the ones that just orbits.
Like, what are you into? I'm into astronaut punching. I don't even know that one. No, it's a lot more literal than
yeah.
you think.
Yeah. Look who. So
an astronaut punch is where, like, she's like, no. It's yeah. actually just being punched by an astronaut.
She's like weightless and I'm wearing big gloves. And there's a limited air supply.
Yeah.
And then you eat Tang, or whatever yeah. it's called, you eat toothpaste.
And then you keep doing it until she has a problem.
Good. Tell me about being Buzz Aldrin. What did you do? What did you
well,
say?
I
did
was,
you fuck up? Did you? Did you?
No, I was pretty good on that one. Except he was a bit of a dick.
was he?
He's
old moon face.
But in a curmudgeonly, but like, I'll let it happen. So I did a TV show that he was also on.
Okay, which show?
It was the Nerdist TV show, which ran for a couple of seasons on BBC America.
Mm.
It was like the TV spin-off of the wildly successful
the popular
podcast
yeah.
And they had stand-ups on it. But Buzz Aldrin was the main guest on the episode that I was doing stand-up on.
Right.
So I just made sure I was in the corridor when he was walking past.
Nice.
And I just sort of went, hi, Mr. Aldrin, I'm the comedian on the show. And he just went, you're the comedian?
Now I've seen everything.
Yeah.
Me, Buzz Aldrin. I've been to space. I've touched God's beard, but now a British man.
Never did I think I would see such a day.
A white British man telling jokes. What
are the chances? And then,
really, why was he so confused?
And then he said something about my friend's multicoloured hair. Asked if she was wearing a wig.
Buzz Aldrin's really easily startled by things that are quite normal. Like, weird coloured hair is not that weird these days, in these modern times.
It's not as weird as strapping yourself on top of a bomb and landing on a different celestial object.
Yeah, yeah, that seems bigger. Do you think maybe his sort of parameters for what's outrage, what's like weird, sort of stopped in like the 70s, like the early 70s? Now it's like everything baffles him.
Well, you know, he's
iced coffee. What?
That's an oxymoron if ever I heard one. Coffee, the hot beverage.
A woman president? I hope. Oh god.
He is a Republican.
There's a lot that
Buzz Aldrin gets a pass on account of him being Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah, how can you be a Republican and an astronaut?
Oh, there's quite a few Republican
astronauts.
Oh, I guess
they are, like, army guys, aren't they?
Yeah. But there's a certain amount of, I think it sort of tends towards the fiscal republicanism, and that, but there are certain aspects of...
He's got to keep his moon money. They're not taking my moon money. That's my Buzz Aldrin impression.
Try to spend it in stores. Mr. Aldrin, we require terrestrial currency.
But these are my moon dollars.
How many moon monies would give me one of these Pepsi Colas?
Coke Zero? What a time to be alive.
Yeah, you know what else was zero? My gravity when I was in space. Now give it to me for free.
Oh, do you get free refills if you're Buzz Aldrin? Oh man!
He also did a rap song with Snoop Dogg.
Of course he did. Why wouldn't he?
It's called Rocket Experience.
That, am I right in thinking there might have been a metaphor in there for rockets and sexing?
No, I think this song is legitimately just about rockets.
Right. Yeah, they are fun. Right. Oh man! So who else have you met who's frightened you?
I was relatively cool with John Cleese, but I was definitely like, holy shit, it's John Cleese.
Okay.
When I was a baby comic, I've told this story on podcast before, but not your podcast.
You're a baby comic?
Yeah, like a little junior comic.
Not like a child comic.
Have you never seen the footage of that?
What's the deal with... Oh, too many. No, not going to do
it's
what
Matt
I think.
Gershon, a baby comic.
I sort of started down a road of I'm going to do a funny misunderstanding of what a baby comic is, and I thought, oh, we can all imagine it. Mm-hmm. We're all intelligent people. We can just imagine what that would be like. It would be adorable. Move on. When you were a fledgling comic,
I did manage to repeatedly humiliate myself in front of Eddie Izzard.
What did you do?
I've numerous times. So the first time was at a charity gig, mm-hmm. and I was just there backstage as the guest of a more established comic, and he was the headliner, and Boothby Graffo introduced me to him, and I was so nervous I managed to get my name wrong.
Your own name?
Yeah.
What did you say?
I just garbled some combination of syllables that vaguely related to mine.
Hi, I'm Eddie Izzard. I mean, oh, shit. Oh, that's adorable.
So that was, I was like 22, 23 and a year or two into comedy. Oh. And then there were a couple that weren't really my fault because it was the person I was with who was awkward. There's five occasions, by the way. There's five different...
I want to hear all of them. This is a show about fear and...
So two of them weren't my fault. One of them was at the Grouch Show, and which is like a private... members club.
I like that we're explaining the grad. You know, we should, yeah.
And
in case any Americans are listening, thank you for your interest, Americans.
Just generally meant to play it cool and not like ask for photos with people that the person I was with didn't. So that was all right. That wasn't me being a dick. That was the person I was with. And then
who did they ask for photos with?
With Izzard. This is all.
Oh, this is all with Eddie Izzard. Oh, hang on, this is five. Oh god, it's five Izzard times.
Five Izzard.
Holy shit.
Five different occasions.
I think you get the sixth one free. If you punch a card.
I think actually every single time we've been in the same room, there's yet to be an encounter that has been chill.
Oh my god, I'd love to hear that from his side.
Oh, I'm sure, I'm pretty sure he won't remember a single one of them.
Right.
And I hope not, because it was just an encounter with a person. Then there was another time, it was in another charity gig, it was in America, and I was with someone who got very confused between, like, what the various different words that begin with trans might be related to him. And it was just an awkward conversation and...
What, so they went up to 20 years old and went, I understand you're a transvestite, well, or whatever.
We were all sort of sat in a circle. But that was, anyway, that was just me being cringy in the vicinity of someone, but we were sort of together.
Right.
We were, and then the two worst ones. well, there was a time that I was at the Comedy Store in London, and he was just down there watching, I can't remember what show it was, but he was just down there hanging by, if you go to the London Comedy Store, there's like a little standing area that's next to where the toilets are.
Yeah.
That
it's where the cool kids hang.
Yeah, it's normally where the comics would gather if they want to watch the show from the side of the room, basically. And he was just stood there in a group with a few people, a couple of whom I knew, like a couple of, like Suki Webster was one of them. And like, there were a few people in the group who like, it can give me some credibility, but I was hammered. And I'd seen him do a show at Largo about 2 weeks earlier in LA. Right. And, like, I guess we both travelled to the UK around the same time.
Oh, we might even be on the same plane.
So I was just, like, really drunk now. I sort of slurred at him, like, I saw you a week ago at Largo, you're like, brilliant! So that was just like, all right.
What did he do?
He said, he was just gracious.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't say you were good!
And just watching the show.
That's not bad.
No, that's not bad. That's just drunken.
It's just cumulative at this point.
It's all cumulative. Because also, the one that I'm the most embarrassed
about. Yay!
So many of these are at charity gigs for some reason.
Okay, so this has all been a subtle ploy to get your philanthropy out there.
Yeah, I'm really charitable.
I just keep doing these charity gigs with
it. But I wasn't, though. Only one of them was I in any way involved in the others. I was just...
Oh, so you bought a ticket?
No, I was just fucking around backstage with my friends. Like, the other two. Like, the first one where I got my name wrong, like, I was just... It was the Gilda Balloon fundraiser after the fire.
Right.
And, again, I was just, like, there, like, chatting to, like, I think Stephen Kay, Morrison Boothby Graffo, and a few other comics were back there, and I ended up just back there as... and then one of them was in LA, and Jim Jefferies was on the show, and I went down to hang with him. And then this one was the Secret Policeman's Ball.
Oh, yeah.
The first of the comeback Secret Policeman's Balls. Secret Policeman's Ball, I think is the correct plural.
Secret Policeman Ball. Secret Policeman Ball, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Secret Policeman Ball.
Secret Policeman Ball. Go on, proceed.
And I was there legitimately, and I was a writer on that one. I was just there as like a... helping out with some of the sketches that were happening. Our mutual friend David Tyler, producer of Bigopedia, which Sarah and I both wrote on.
Yes, thanks for plugging that. You can get it on Audible, we'll get 4p.
Yeah. So David had brought me in on that one, and he was the headliner slash co-organiser. I think he was involved in actually the process of bringing it back. And at the after party, I was drunk. Alcohol was definitely involved again.
What?
And, Paul Provenza was there.
Okay.
And Paul knew me from Edinburgh and some other stuff. Mm-hmm. He knew Eddie because he knows everyone, and Eddie had been in the Aristocrats, and
of course,
I think they had numerous other encounters. And Paul's a great person to introduce you to someone.
Yeah.
Because Paul's kind of respected by everyone.
Yeah.
So he's
vouches for you, yeah.
Yeah, he's a perfect person to vouch for you, because he's a great link, and everyone trusts him, and he has credibility in the industry. Yeah. And he knew that I was a fan of Izzard, so so he introduced me to him. Now, here's where my brain was. So, at the time, there was a gig that I set up when I was a student at my university, and I still went back to run it, and I'd bring a headliner, like a proper headliner, to close it out. And that was going to be the next day, and that was in my head, and I thought as a funny joke, you can already see where this is going, as a funny joke to ask him to do it, knowing that he'd know it was a joke, and... and he didn't know it was a joke. he just really graciously declined.
Oh god. It's like 80 degrees here and I got goosebumps. That's
And
that's,
you know,
oh no, and you can't reverse out of a joke.
No,
when...
you can't. When you've done that kind of joke, when you've done the kind of like when someone doesn't realise it's a joke and you've got two options, either to go, "I was just kidding," or double down.
Yay.
So then I was like, "Oh, it's 150 cash and there's a driver."
Oh god, you didn't. Oh fuck, right, okay.
And then he just like in one swift move, just sort of a very professional I'm a celebrity kind of move, just sort of went, it was almost like a single motion, went, "Oh, thanks, but no thanks," and he was somehow already talking to someone who's 90 degrees away from me. Like, almost before the sentence was finished, he'd managed to get into a different conversation that's a...
I am really interested in whatever is being discussed over here.
Yeah, it's such a bad... It's not even a joke. First, okay.
Yeah.
Just analysing and thinking about it now.
Yeah, let's go. I like that this is probably played in your brain for like
so many times.
That is
so
what this
times.
Show is. This is and then I just wake up screaming sometimes.
So many times. And just not. So many of my just general chills in life, when you're talking about the horror, I don't have that many phobias, but like I do. Cringe moments just hit me time and time again. I'm sure harder than the average person. Like every time, I'm like, ah. But it's just it's such a bad non-joke. Because firstly, I, in my drunken state, assumed that he would instantly know that I was kidding.
Right?
But why would he know I was kidding?
No. Yeah.
It's not such an absurd request.
Yeah.
It's a gig that's well below his station. But I'm sure he gets requests like that every day. I'm sure his agent and manager and web host, whatever.
Or his cousins or sisters, something or other. I know ideas. We could ask him to do our college gig.
Yeah, right? I'm sure he spends half his life fielding requests that are well below what he'd ever consider. And I know that because I do. And I'm like seven rungs below him.
Yeah.
Like, but I constantly get people asking me to do gigs that like, "No, I don't think you understand."
Yeah.
Like, what you're asking and what the actual going rate would be for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And how absurd. Like, no, I don't want to drive for half a day for dinner and doing your show.
Is this the equivalent? I think nowadays the equivalent would be going, it would be funny to ask him to do your podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that almost would. That.
Well, no, you could, because you have.
But even that, like, I would do that beyond asking to do a cash gig.
Yeah.
That's. A fraction of his level. Because a podcast is almost like it's like a different thing itself. And then also, even if, thinking about it more, even if he did know it was a joke, even if he realised it was a joke, it's putting him in a shitty position.
Because his response is going to be, "Yeah, that sounds like a load of shit."
Yeah. All that joke is going is like making him have to, it's not even a joke, like putting joke in the heaviest quotes possible. But like, that's making him go, "Ha ha ha ha, of course I wouldn't do your shitty, tiny, rubbish gig, you shit."
That's
you
a great
do
joke.
Nothing.
That's a great joke because I would never do that.
Because I'm much more famous than you.
Oh,
I'm wildly
God.
More successful, so of course I won't. Come into your world of nothing. where 150 pounds is a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, imagine. There's probably someone in the world who thinks that's like worth it. If I dropped that, it would be more expensive for me to stop and pick it up.
Yeah. that's an amount of money I'd spend on a glass of water that I then pour on the floor in front of a thirsty man.
Wow, ideas, that's horrible. I had no idea. Oh my god.
So yeah, he graciously declined and then just very quickly got into a different conversation.
Oh, and
I was
still
like, well,
haunting.
I missed my opportunity to have a nice conversation with someone I respect.
And so did he.
Yeah.
That's what was sad. He's like, maybe he would have loved me too. Let's talk about your favourite scary moment from film or TV.
The two episode miniseries.
It was a film in the UK. It was released as a three-hour film, yeah. But in America,
I watched it on TV. and two parts. But I definitely watched it with my sister when both of us were substantially too young to do that. Like, we shouldn't have. We shouldn't have been watching it, and it scared the shit out of us.
Yeah. Because one of the original briefs for this show was people can talk about anything on the show. They can. It's an open, it's a safe space. There are no wrong answers. There, I will never mock anyone for their fears or phobias. But let's not mention clowns, because fucking hell, Jesus, clowns a bit played out now, particularly here in LA at the moment. Fucking hell, there's been actual clown murders and attacks and things, right?
Well, not murders. And actually, it hasn't really been in Southern California. It's been more on the East Coast. But like, clowns are like popping out of the woods and like scaring people and grabbing them and like, and in some places actually like cutting people.
But also, I think most of the injuries have been to the clowns from...
Yeah, yes. I'm not fucking surprised.
Yes.
Like, I like that they've made clowns scary. Oh, so there was a stand-up the other day, he said that, wasn't it? We were watching some stand-up and someone said they made clowns scary again, which was great. It's a great line. Anyway.
Clowns are... But I think it is... I think they, like, they say that clowns are generally more scared of you than you are of them.
Like, and you shouldn't touch them because their hair might fall off. And
yeah.
They can't survive without their hair.
Yeah, right. Also, if you touch them,
the
and
baby
then they go back,
won't nurse anymore.
Their scent will be rubbed off on you, and they'll be rejected by their pack.
So, oh my god, so are you scared of clowns?
I'm not scared of clowns.
But you were scared of Pennywise?
Yeah, I think...
Understandably.
Yeah, look,
it's a brilliant and horrible film, and I love it.
It's totally the context and the story and film rather than that. Like, clowns don't scare me. Like, and
you said that really defensively. Clowns don't scare me.
I'm cool with them. You could put me in a room. Just try. Don't. Just.
Yeah. don't test my theory.
Like, we were talking about Roombas earlier, and I feel like that would be a great thing to have your Roomba be able to do, to be clap activated.
So you couldn't get up and just put a switch
on.
Exactly.
You've already got a remote control vacuum.
Much effort.
May as well be able to clap that.
Why isn't it phone app operated? Roomba should connect.
It's not?
I think I
don't know.
I don't know. I'm asking.
Maybe they already are.
I'm
like
obsessed.
You should be able to remote control them with your phone.
This was something that came up the other night when we were talking about Jumbo's Clown Room, which is a alt strip club in Los Angeles where sort of alternative type ladies do dancing that seems slightly more unionized, slightly more empowered than your average strip club, but that might just be the impression they want to give. I don't know. But I was saying the only bit about Jumbo, like Courtney Love started there and other famous rock stars have done turns there and stuff like that. But Courtney Love didn't start there. Like, that was actually about, like, someone came in and went, you, do a record.
You look like you've got what it takes.
Yeah. But I got kind of obsessed with the idea. The only bit I don't like is after someone's done a dance to some music that's good alternative rock music, they have to then, like, crawl around on the stage and pick up the dollars people have thrown. It just slightly takes the edge off the fact that it's empowered
yeah.
in some way. And yes, I'm completely aware the jury is out on whether any kind of strip club can be empowering to women, but they seem fine. They look like they're having a nice time. And I don't think these women are great actresses. So anyway, so they, I was saying they should get, it would be great if you could assign a kind of like strip club Roomba that went around and
I think we're on the fence as to whether that should be an actual Roomba or a person in a Roomba.
A human Roomba.
A sexy Roomba.
Yeah, a human Roomba would be a really great idea. Like a girl, some kind of like strip club gimp who went around picking up the money for the ladies. That would work. Weird digression. What were we doing? We're going from clappers to Roombas to... Oh, we're talking about It.
So, yeah, Stephen King's
yeah.
It.
So is there a particular moment from It that scared you?
I'm trying to remember. I remember the shower scene being scary and the gutter.
So you watched it with your sister when you were tiny and little.
Yeah.
And
well,
there was an illicit sense.
It came out in like 89 or something.
Yeah.
So I would have been like 9 or 10 when I saw it.
And you knew you weren't meant to be watching it, which always helps with...
Yeah. I don't think we were like forbidden from watching it. I think our parents were just unaware, but...
And
I definitely...
Is your sister older or younger?
She's younger than me.
So you were in charge as well?
Yeah, so I was like pretty cool brother. You can watch this terrifying clown thing. And I think we actually had to, I don't know whether the second part came on the next day or whether we even had to wait a week before watching like the second half.
Oh.
Because the second half is kind of weird. Like, the second half... The first half was scarier to me.
Yeah.
I think...
The second half gets very cute. It's like a big spider in it and stuff.
The spider's kind of rubbish at the end. Like, yeah, that's also...
And it's not as weird as the ending of the book, which... have you read the book?
I've read some of the book. I've got the book. I've never finished reading it.
The ending of the book, spoiler alert for a 25-year-old book or however old it is, it involves... Well, it's the ending of the book because it's sort of set in the two timelines, isn't it? The children and the grown-ups. Same group of kids, the same group of people as their children and as their grown-ups, both times defeating Pennywise the clown and you, or the it that in manifests itself as a clown when they're children and as a
giant spider.
Big spider. But in the, both of them involve them getting stuck in tunnels, like drain systems, where all the clown down the drain thing comes from. And in the book, to get out of the tunnels when they're all... And the kids in the book are, like, 11 or 12. They all... they're all, like... They feel like they're losing their friendship group and they're all arguing amongst each other and they're stuck in the tunnels. So they... To reunite their friendship, they all have sex with the girl in the gang. And she's, like, 11 or 12 and they're, like, 11 or 12. And it's... I don't think you'd write it now, put it that way. It's really odd. Like, you're just like, okay, Stephen King. No, that's, you know, I'm genuinely creeped out. Well done. I wasn't frightened of the weirdy clown stuff, but this is horrifying. There's just some children fucking each other in your book halfway through. Like, yeah. So that doesn't happen in the film.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that definitely was... That was
they came out of the TV movie.
Now you see it, now you don't. It has returned with vengeance. It is evil personified.
I'll kill you all. I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true.
I remember there used to be, did you ever go to the alien thing at the Trocadero?
No. Oh, is that like great. like a crystal maze running around inside the thing?
Yeah, I heard of it.
Yeah,
that used to be the thing that I would take every any visitor to London. Like,
was there the people in suits dressed up as aliens and that?
Oh, now you're spoiling it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not on anymore. The Trocadero is now like
it was
luxury
real,
flat.
It was real.
Bloody London.
Real aliens, Sarah. It was real.
Oh,
aliens.
I'm sorry.
No, but that's exactly what it was. You go into like a sort of maze type thing, and it's all done to look like. I also, by the way, that would also go on a list of. Horror things that I really like, but it was all done to look like the aliens
right.
ship and movie, mm-hmm. whatever. It's all the same production design, and you get into like a cargo elevator, and this guy who's dressed like one of the commandos, and mm-hmm. he's leading you around, and then there's like there's a problem, something's gone wrong.
Oh, I love that.
And then there's like alarms go off, and then suddenly, and like. You end up running through this maze with this guy, and every so often you turn around a corner and there's like a strobe light and an alien jumps out and you're like, and you run off down the next corridor.
Awesome.
And at some point someone from your group gets taken. Like they steal a man from the group.
Wow.
But I remember but I went with my cousin once. My cousins were over from Israel and I took them there. my sister and I took them there because it was great. Oh, also the final corridor you run through. So the final bit, you like run through a maze and like, you're screaming and then you run through the next maze and you run through, burst through another door and you run out and then you suddenly realise you're just back in the Trocadero.
The scariest place on earth. No, I've got to go and have an oldie timey photo taken.
Dance Dance Revolution. Actually, this would have predated Dance Dance Revolution.
There's overpriced pick and mix everywhere.
Air hockey. Yeah, that's like the final turn. You'll get spilled out, and everyone runs out screaming, and they goes, oh, and they're slightly embarrassed. They just run past everyone who's queuing to get in, and then you remember, oh yeah, when I was queuing to get in, a whole group of people ran out screaming. But my cousin was like, we were going around the whole thing, and he was just didn't buy into it. So we're like running through, and he's like, it was just people in costumes. Like, obviously, it's just people in costumes. They don't have real aliens, but maybe meet it halfway and we'll have fun.
Oh my god! Yeah, I love that. It's not real. It's not
what
real.
What do you think it would cost to get real aliens.
Get H.G. Geiger to come in with some props.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much would you have to pay aliens to be in your annual alien-themed haunted house?
Well, they could make, you know, they get, like, free pick and mix and stuff. And yeah. Free. Did you know
all
that pick and mix was the most profitable thing in the Trocadero?
I can imagine. That's some expensive pick and mix.
It was.
And they said, surely oldie-timey sepia photos was...
Oldie-timey sepia photos wasn't shit on the pick and mix.
Why do you know this stuff?
Because my uncle used to work for the company that owned the Trocadero.
Wow, wow, wow.
So we had, when they opened the Sega World on the upstairs level, with all its sort of shonky virtual reality rides that made you slightly nauseous.
I'm getting really homesick now.
Yeah. We got to go on family day before. We were like the dry... They had like a few days where it was open before they let the general public in when they tested it. And everything was on free play.
Wow.
We got to go. And that's when he dropped that little fact on us.
It's pretty cool. I can imagine. That's some expensive pick and mix.
Dear podcast connoisseur, it's entirely evident that you know your podcast stuff. Why else are you here? That's why I'm here to recommend Smirchpod.
What a helpful chap.
Now, Smirchpod is a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain.
If he's half the genius they say he is, we're in for real trouble.
So why not join me as I delve deeply into Bond and Bond-related films, tackling a different film in each episode with an exciting guest by my side. I promise you'll have a lovely time.
That's putting it mildly, 007.
Oh, shut up, Q. Put your fingers away, for God's sake.
I hope you don't snore, Q.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plot like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
Well, there was like a thing at the fun fair. You know those sort of houses that was like a house that you'd go through, and everything was like a different obstacle course. So like you had to go
like at the end of Greece, Shake Shack.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
At the
that.
End of Greece,
like,
yes.
There's, like, one's the barrel that you have to get through, and then there's, like, sort of climbing frame, but it's, like, the climbing frame is made of, like, in two halves, and they're going up, but alternately to each other, so when one half goes up, the other half goes down.
Yeah, so your legs go comically, like a ski.
Yeah,
so
you sort of, you put your left arm and left, you put your left hand and left foot on one bit, and you hold on as it goes up, and then you swap over to the right one, because that one's then going up as the other one goes down.
Whoa.
And you climb up, so there's that thing. But there was one, but I remember there being, like, one bit that was, like, a moving walkway, but it was just a bit too fast. And I freaked out. Like,
oh, my God. Yeah.
It was
no,
like,
that's horrible.
Yeah. It was, like imagine, like, the thing at the airport, like, the moving walkway.
Yeah.
But narrower and shorter, but, like, five times as fast. But I could have just stepped on, but I just kept, like, getting nervous. Like, I couldn't. And in the end, the man had to stop it, and it had to...
Oh, I'm not laughing. I'm sorry. I wasn't laughing in judgment. That's adorable. I know exactly. Yeah.
Was laughing.
Holly was laughing. That's fine.
But yours was more of a supportive laugh.
Yeah. Mine was like a fucking hell. No, mine was like a, oh God, there's nothing. So that thing when you're, and it was it just your imagination was just going like, I could die on this thing.
No, it was just too far. So like, I'm going to slip and fall over. And then my mum asked if he could put it on at a slower speed, and he said, that's not a thing.
I remember once when I was a kid...
By the way, like, this is like 30 years ago, and I'm still cringing at the memory.
So are you cringing at the memory of the man taking you off the ride, or off the...
I think I'm probably mostly cringing at the memory of my mum asking if he can slow it down so I could have a go.
I remember when I was... Oh, God... That's so funny. That's how scared you were. Like, you wouldn't overcome the embarrassment of your mum talking to a carny out and getting him to stop the ride doing the thing it's intended to do for fun. Didn't over, like you were still like, no, I'm not getting on that fucking thing. It's going to, like, kill me.
Yeah, but it's...
Because fairgrounds are spooky, right?
Yeah, but again, it's not, like, a spooky fear. It's a fear of, like... It's a fear of falling on my ass.
Right.
It's a fear of being hurt.
Not in a... so when I was about... Oh, you never said what age you were. 25, right?
Yeah. And that was just today.
And that was just the teachers.
I couldn't pinpoint a specific age. Yeah. At some point in my youth when I was young.
I was... When I was about 9 or 10, the first time I went on a visit to London with my mum... And I'd heard all about the Chamber of Horrors and Madame Tussauds, and I was really fucking excited. Like, oh, I can't wait to go to the Chamber of Horrors, Went around, couldn't give a shit about the other celebrity waxworks. Really excited. And then I got to the entrance, and I just built it up so much in my head as to what would be in the Chamber of Horrors. And I think by the time I'd sort of gone past, like, the Queen and the celebrities of the time, Ronald Reagan, I don't know who the fuck the celebrities would have been in the age of Tiffany.
There would have been Michael Jackson there.
Yeah. There's probably a Madonna. I probably would have got excited about the Madonna, but by the time all I was thinking about all the way around is just like how great it was going to be. And then I got that, and I think I just built up so much in my head that when I got to the entrance of the Chamber of Horrors, I was sort of legit convinced that someone came out and actually killed you, and like and they were going to kill me and my mum. And it was always my mum I was more worried about. It was like, legit, someone's going to jump out, like, someone dressed out as Jack. Like, all there's going to be in there is a man going, "Ahar, I'm Jack the Ripper," in this weird accent that I'm doing, even though I'm from London. And I've killed some... And then there'll be some, like, crappy waxworks. But in my head, I was like, that man just murders you, and then you don't leave. And that's the business model of Madame Tussauds, Jim Forrest. So my mum had to get a man to take us off the path and take us out, like, through the gift shop and take us out of Madame Tussauds. And I've never been. It doesn't even exist anymore, Chamber of Horrors. Now it's London Dungeon, isn't it? Which is somewhere else in London. It was... London Dungeon was...
Are they two separate? I assume they were still next door to each other.
No, London Dungeon has moved now. And I know people who work in London Dungeon being... Oh, I'm a busty wench, and no, Jack the Ripper don't murder me. It's all Jack the Ripper. There's nothing else in. There must be other things in there.
I think the guillotine was one of them.
There'll be Madame Tussauds.
Oh yeah,
so, yeah. But she would go around taking the death masks of the Arab French. She's God, I know a thing. It's because I write on horrible histories. It's the only reason I know anything historical. Because I've written a horrible histories and I have this cheat sheet of things. Fun fact. Yeah, Madame Tussauds got famous because she was hired to do the death mask of all the aristocracy after they got guillotined. And that then you went and looked at the death masks of... then that's where the lovely waxwork medium we know and love today that's got, like, Justin Bieber and stuff in it comes from.
I had a genuinely terrifying experience... in a local haunted house when I was, I think, about five.
Oh, my God. See, I've always imagined, like, what would happen if something really, really bad happened in a real haunted house, because no one would know for ages, right? So tell me everything. I'm fascinated.
So
this is like razor blades in the apple shit. I love it.
So I've told you this story.
Yeah, I want
to
hear.
This was, like, because I've only been to a few haunted houses since then. We were talking about going to it this year,
yeah,
which I was fine with, but I always know there will be one moment in there when I feel like I'm going to die.
Yes.
And that's when I am alone in the dark with just sounds, because when I was 5 years old, we were in this little mountain town in Colorado where I grew up, where my grandparents lived. And we'd gone there because my grandmother was in a coma. We were basically just waiting for her to pass. Yeah. And to distract me, because it was Halloween and I was sad that I wasn't with my kindergarten class, you know, doing our little Halloween parade and stuff. My grandmother's nurse took me and her daughter, who I think was a young teenager, to the local haunted house that was put on by some community organization. So, you know, it's like people in bad Dracula makeup and stuff, and they're leading you around and you're hearing horrible things and stuff. And it was scary, but we were in this daisy chain of, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 people. And I was holding the nurse's hand, and she was holding her daughter's hand in front of her. And our guide, who was one of the costume characters, led us down this hallway that was pitch black. And the daughter let go of the hand in front of her. And because the house is full of people screaming and moaning, when she said, "Hey," they didn't hear her. And it was pitch black, and we had no idea. We felt around the walls, couldn't find a door.
Oh, no!
Screamed help for anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. I don't know. It was a long
30 seconds.
Long
but
time.
I know.
To the
know,
point that, like, it wasn't just me, you know, as a little tiny child, basically hyperventilating. But we were all crying by the time somebody actually came up and was like, oh, and found us and took us out of there. But we were stuck in this black, and it was also hot.
Yeah.
Room, and just all you could hear were people screaming around you. We couldn't get out. It was the absolute worst, and I'm still claustrophobic.
Yeah.
As a result.
I love that, though. It feels like I guess the Scream films is the only one that's really capitalised on it. The idea of just, like, how much bad shit you could get away with. And this is where my mind always goes. If I go into, like, a haunted maze or something like that, I just think, like, this would be perfect for an actual murderer to get on. Because no one would know for ages.
Right.
No one would... You could get away with so much. When I went to Universal
Halloween
Horror Nights, there were so many points on this thing called the Tram of Terror, curated by Eli Roth from the hospital. Eli Roth, literally his involvement was coming in, sitting down. They posted him a big pile of money across the table and he got a piece of paper and he wrote the word clowns on it and pushed it back. It's literally, you get on the Universal Studio Tour buses, whatever they're called, and then you stop and you get off and some clowns chase you. Eli Roth, creator of some of the most bone-chilling masterpieces from history, said clowns, and they did it. Some clowns chasing through some wasteland. Towards the Psycho House, so that's good. You actually do go past the Psycho House on the Universal. But you don't stop or anything. It's just like, oh, Psycho House.
I did a TV thing on the...
But sorry, my point was, I felt there was so many points on that tour when you were like just riding through, in the dark, through Universal, through like the back lot.
Yeah.
Where if someone had jumped on, it would have been really awesome because you would have had no idea, like, if it was meant to be happening or not. It would have been genuinely bone-chilling. But also then I kind of figured out... from talking to someone who works in those mazes. No, you just get punched all the time if you work in those mazes anyway. So they have to be really careful about not doing actual,
right,
we're fucking with you terror, because people get like punched and kicked and
time. I went to, Jason Blum, who does the Paranormal Activity movies.
Okay.
So I don't know if he does it anymore, but for a few years he was sponsoring a haunted house out here that was an immersive... It was based on The Purge. He does The Purge movies.
Okay.
So you've got...
Oh, yeah, they had that at Universal. Yeah.
So basically, as you're entering, Purge Night is beginning, and they do this thing where they, like, separate people from the group and stuff. And I'm fine with, like, actors with bloody faces screaming in my face, scary little girls with knives running around. You know, all of that, I'm fine because I can see it. But they tried, I went with my friend Brad, and they tried to make Brad be the guy separated from the group. And I stayed with Brad, and the actor was just like, He couldn't touch, and I knew I was fucking then, up their narrative.
They're not allowed to touch you.
They're not allowed to touch you.
But they're sort of like strippers. Yeah. They're like trained in the art of getting as close as possible and unnerving you without. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they don't let you buy booze in Universal. There's Simpsons World at Universal, and there's a Duff Gardens, and there's a Moe's Tavern, and I was so excited. Like, I have a Duff beer, and you're not. You can only have Buzz Cola because they don't want people getting drunk and punching clowns in a maze, which is fair. Punching Freddy's Krueger in a maze, yeah.
Well, this had a bar at the very end of it, so you could, you know, you could wash away the fear after.
I remember I was talking to Danny Lobel, fellow comic. He's an American comic, and he spent quite a lot of time in Scotland. Mm. He's got family there. And the alien thing at the Trocadero moved to Glasgow.
Right.
I think it was Glasgow. It might have been Edinburgh, but I think it was Glasgow after it was in London. And before you went in there, in the Glasgow version, there was an announcement, do not punch the alien.
Just a reminder, aliens aren't real. If an alien jumps out at you, just don't punch it.
Was it more necessary in Glasgow than London?
So yeah, Glasgow. Glasgow. Do you remember that guy who punched an on-fire terrorist at Glasgow Airport? That was pretty cool. There was a guy who immolated?
Self-immolated?
Yeah, self-immolated and ran into Glasgow Airport.
And somebody punched him.
And punched him out. Some Glaswegian guy just punched him. And he was like he's never bought his own drink since that day.
punched the terrorist on fire. Yeah. Punched out the terrorist fire. Yep, that was me.
Yeah. You are never, here, have all of the free drinks forever and ever. We're going to put you on the money in Scotland now.
Oh, but that's what I was going to... So, right. I did a thing on the Universal lot, and, like, the psycho thing is always there. The house that...
Yeah, the house is always there,
The house is always there, but also, if you're on the normal tour outside of Halloween time, as you drive past, a guy comes out.
Yeah, nice. I'd have enjoyed that. But being chased by clowns. I was faking it.
But I was on the lot with my car, and rather than drive straight out, I just went, can I just have a drive around? And they went, all right.
Wow, you so shouldn't be allowed to do that.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't meant to be doing that.
So I just knocked down like the Gone with the Wind set.
There's all roads running through there. But I just drove behind the tram, so I was like about a minute behind the tour. So I got to see the psycho, this tram went past, and I got to see the psycho guy come and run out and scare them, and then like just wander back to the house and have a cigarette. Well, I was going to talk about heights, because that's still, I think that's still connected to that same fear of the moving walkway. Like, I still don't like... I don't like diving boards. I don't like being on the edge of things. And by
this all seems, like, completely rational as a fear.
I think it has some rationale. Well, diving boards less so, because even if you... If you're on, like, a... I mean, maybe for, like, a 10-metre platform, but if you're on, like, a 3-metre board, or even a 5-metre one, and even if someone, like, just... Even if someone pushes you off and you land sideways... The most that's going to happen is you'll get bruised. You're like it's not a fatal height landing in water.
Yeah, you look like a twat.
You look like a twat, but but so I think the fear. I think it definitely is would class a phobia because there's a level of irrationality to it. You can't directly connect it to mortal danger, but and when it comes to like being on the edge of like for example, if we're on a balcony, I wouldn't ever be one of those people who could sit on the balcony. And part of that fear would be that someone would shove me. Like, I know some people, it's like, oh, I might jump. But no, it's with me. It's like, no, I don't trust people around me to not... Oh, you know that thing that... You know that... I fucking hate... Like, I've never in any way found someone funny who does the shove you and catch you kind of thing. You know,
no. Fuck those people. Like, fuck them.
You thought I was going to make you dead, but I didn't.
Oh, no, I could never speak to someone who did that to me again. That's the worst.
No one's done that to me in many years, but that was definitely a school thing.
Yeah, ugh. We were talking about, heights. So how, has your life ever been inconvenienced to avoid heights?
Inconvenience. There's been times where I might have wanted to have jumped off a thing and got nervous and not done it, and I wish I had done it.
Like what? What was the last thing you wanted to jump off?
Well, like, I remember there being a cliff in Cyprus.
Right.
like a not a particularly high a high enough cliff, like again probably about 5 meters or something, that would have been cool to jump off into the sea. Because any time I actually have made myself jump, the second I've jumped, I've been cool. I've enjoyed it. Like, I've enjoyed getting over that feeling. And often got being able to go back and do it again once I've done it the first time.
Would you...
Like, I remember there being one of those on some family trip. And again, it was like a cliff, but it was like a sort of outdoor area where there are loads of people jumping off this thing in a sort of outdoor swimming, natural swimming area. And the only thing that made me jump in the end was that my younger sister was behind me and she was definitely going to jump if I didn't jump and I couldn't sit her up there and watch her jump with me not. So then I jumped and then it was fun and then I did another 5 times. But before that, I was like stood at the top for a good 5-10 minutes not doing anything.
Oh, amazing.
Like letting other people go past me.
Aww. That's such a visceral thing, is like standing at the thing, sort
of
like
taking that half move and then sort of backing off again.
Yeah, that's me. That's me at the gate of the Chamber of Horrors at Madame Tussauds. I think it's such a childhood thing of just like, if I do this thing, I'm gonna look like an idiot, and if I don't do this thing, I'm gonna look like it's gonna be.
And again, it is vaguely with that connected to, there is some logic, you know, you're like, I could slip and slip backwards and then hit my head off the rock and then be dead. You're like,
yeah, that's legit jumping off a cliff,
But again, when I say a cliff, like, it was a natural formation, but it's a natural formation that everyone jumped off because it had a bit of an overhang and it went into a very safe, deep outdoor pool where it was like a, you know, there was no, like, you've got to hit this point, otherwise you're going to bounce off jagged
and
rocks.
Even the logic of seeing hundreds of people doing it completely safely and having a lovely time doing it sometimes isn't enough, though, because you're like, I will be the one person who somehow gets it wrong.
Yeah.
And somehow, it's like, I used to log water slides. You'd always do, when you were a kid, there's always a rumour that someone had put a razor blade in a water slide.
Oh.
No,
I remember that, I remember that.
There was always a rumour, and you'd just be like, well, I've just watched, like, everyone from my class go down the Black Rapids.
What if Swindon, the one who does the razor blades?
Yeah. They I can see them. They look crafty. They're going to put their hands and feet out like that, and like a spider, and then they'll pull out the razor blade they've got concealed in their swimming costume, tuck it in the wall, and then I'll be the next. It'll be Muggins here. It gets razor blade up the leg.
They've got, like, resin to bed it in.
They've got to do a bit of spot welding down the Black Rapids at Swindon Oasis. Absolutely legit. Totally think that could happen. Something happened to you here that to me seems like the legit most scary thing that could ever happen to a human being in the world. But you do material about it on stage, so it's quite. There was like a shooting.
Yeah, that was.
Tell me about that in scariness terms.
It kind of. I mean, I stretch it out on stage, and I always sort of do stand up at your podcast, but. I was.
Holly just plucked an eyelash off Matt's face, like she was tending to him like a little kitten. It was really cute. And she's gonna like lick his fur in a second. It was adorable.
Sorry.
That's lovely. This just got weird. I'm gonna turn this recorder off.
I was driving a friend home at like 2:30. It was after bar closing, and it wasn't actually that far from here, but it was just slight. It was a few, like half a mile that way. And
for the listener at home, Matt indicated in a direction.
I did.
It means nothing to me.
Southish from here.
Oh.
And we were stopped at a corner, and there were a group of people. We were stopped at like a crossroads of the lights, and there were a group of people stopped in the corner, sort of stood on the corner. And what clearly happened was like, there was some kind of altercation, but all we heard was just suddenly, like, the pop of, like, 4 or 5 shots in rapid succession of a gun. And then everyone just ran. So presumably what happened, like, with hindsight, is it was a warning shot. Like, someone, whatever happened, someone just pulled out a gun, fired it above their head.
It was a wedding.
Yeah.
It was at least a wedding taking place.
Like, shit. Yeah, I think it was just, like, some grouse or something.
Yeah, so it just... God.
Yeah.
Yosemite Sam was celebrating something. He's happy or sad. It's too hard to tell with Yosemite Sam. He's very excitable, and that's the moment.
Yeah, but I've been telling the story for a while, so it hasn't really... It no longer occurs to me as a particularly scary... I guess And to Americans, that wouldn't be, depending on where you grew up in America, that wouldn't be the most terrifying thing. It was definitely, like, it's nerve-wracking.
It's pretty, it's scary.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure, like, we were both at heightened adrenaline afterwards.
Yeah. Because I remember seeing, like, when it was on Halloween Day, being amused by those great big signs up all down the street where I was saying that said, like, silly string, completely prohibited, $1,000 fine if you use silly string. And it's like, but guns are fine. Guns.
Oh, I think it's implied that you shouldn't bring your gun to the Halloween parade.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like a manners thing.
Yeah. But we do.
Unless
we
it's a spooky gun.
Yeah.
Woo! Ghosty gun.
Around, I don't know if they do this anymore, but you used to see billboards around town starting around the holidays that are reminding people not to fire their guns into the air to celebrate New Year's. It's like, you know, thank you, LAPD.
Yeah, because people don't realise that in densely populated areas, the bullets come down with and some speed. And
sometimes actually do kill people.
Yeah, people. Yeah. There have been cases of people who've been killed by falling bullets that were fired in the air.
Yeah, so you're at the crossroads. Because I love your reaction. The thing that I think is funniest about this is your reaction to this, because it's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, so
which
the
is
first
be British and terrified and do what you
do. The first thing I did, and again, I won't do stand-up at you because it's obnoxious, but I did genuinely mildly duck. Like, I slightly slumped in my seat. And I think the real reason was I thought one of them might see, and I didn't want them to think... I basically didn't want them to notice us as an entity.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, I want us to just be background furniture, like a lamppost.
Yeah.
Eyewitness in a car. I didn't want to attract any attention to us, so I didn't want to move too much. And then I wanted to drive off, and this is absolutely true, like I said in the bit. I didn't drive off immediately because the light was still red. I didn't want to jump the light.
Yeah, you don't want
to... policing.
It's the last thing you'd want.
Last thing I want is that.
Oh, I've been so law-abiding.
Oh, I don't want those points on my left. So I genuinely remembered at that moment that in America you can make a right, you can make a legal right on red. So I signalled and eased the car around the corner. But even that was tricky because we were in the left lane. I'm like, they're going to notice me making a right on red from the left lane.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.